Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. That's our text and voicemail line. So if you've ever interacted with the show, and for those who have been, it's been fantastic. A load of voicemails to get to and text messages as well on today's episode, just from post-draft reaction and everything else. But if you've never interacted with us, hit us up at 331-979-1369. You can leave all of your text and your voicemails at that line, and you might even hear yourself on the show. So with that, Matt, welcome back from the weekend. After digesting the post-draft press conference and some of the media appearances that Gar Forman and John Paxson did on Friday, some of the local radio stations, and then now hearing Chandler Hutchison and Wendell Carter speak on top of those two guys, plus Fred Hoiberg, anything that jumps out at you right away?
What's going on, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I mean, the thing, listening to their press conference this morning, it's just, I just can't help but laugh. Almost like counting on my hands and feet the number of times that Gar and or Paxson used the word versatility. I mean, it's almost laughable how much they're really trying to hone in on, okay, we get it. Like, nobody was surprised by these picks. They were predictable picks anyway, but their explanation of, yeah, we really like both of these guys because we both feel like they can bring all sorts of versatility to this roster. It's like the new we're high on phrase that gets overused. It's like the, you know, the
that was
Gar definitely also used that phrase on Monday morning as well. It's just funny. I mean, it's almost just so predictable these days what you're going to hear from the Bulls front office when they sit down for one of these official press conferences, because it's a lot of the same stuff. That doesn't mean that I'm disappointed in how the draft went. You and I both gave our reactions to the picks on Friday's show. It's just like, do we ever learn anything new about this front office or how they operate? I guess the one thing that was interesting is that that Gar really honed in on using analytics, especially when looking at Wendell Carter Jr. And then Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic, who we've had here on Locked On Bulls, asked him a follow-up question about, like, can you give us some specifics on those analytics, Gar? In a way that wasn't necessarily like a sarcastic question from Darnell, but honestly just like, I think Bulls fans want to believe and want to know that this Bulls front office does actually value those modern age NBA analytics, because there seems to be this perception among the fan base that this Bulls scouting team led by Gar doesn't use analytics. So that was definitely a key talking point today.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was exactly what I was going to follow up with. The fact that he got kind of pressed on actually having to give physical examples of what analytics drew them to Wendell Carter Jr. And obviously all of us, if you're into analytics, you can go and look this up yourself, but it's intriguing what they thought was at the top of their list as far as analytics go, because
talked about it for a long time, and I don't know if this has been overcasted or not by Bulls fans, but it's well known that the Bulls have a very small analytics team comparatively to some teams like the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors, who are all about analytics. So you look at that and you compare and contrast, and I think you're right. It's sort of the same stuff every time we've watched a press conference before, and I try to give them the benefit of the doubt since Jimmy Butler's trade, but at times Paxson would give us stuff more than he normally did during the season. Now I think we've taken a couple steps back here as far as what we're actually getting that's tangible from both of them. I think I learned more from Fred Hoiberg and what Fred Hoiberg liked about both players than I did from Gar or John Paxson.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. It was nice to see Fred. I feel like that was the first time we'd seen or heard from Fred in a while. I also noticed that he's sporting like a lazy guy summer beard. He's certainly enjoying his off season because it wasn't even a full beard. It was just like Fred looked like he hadn't shaved all week, which is weird because you never see that look. He's always clean shaven during the season.
You know, I think, you know, Gar talked about the versatility that both players will bring to our roster. In my opinion, you've got a modern day big with Wendell, with a guy that's very skilled. You know, I've talked a lot to Coach K in the last week and just about the different ways that he utilized Wendell's skill set. By getting him out on the floor, I thought he did a great job. They ran a lot of high-low with Ian Begley, with Wendell out on the floor, being able to make the high-low pass. The other thing that I was very impressed with as the year went on was his ability to stretch the floor with his three-point shot. He shot over 41% from the three-point line. I think he's a guy that can play make, that can put the ball on the floor. And then I think a big area where he'll help us defensively is at the rim. He's an excellent rim protector. In watching film on Wendell, you know, the more we watched, just his ability to go up and the art of verticality where he goes up. He blocks a lot of shots with two hands and you know, as important, keeps it in play. So you have a very versatile big that I think will fit very well with our other young bigs on our roster. As far as Chandler, you know, the thing that impressed me most about his game was his ability to get the ball off the defensive glass and push it down the floor and facilitate offense. I think he'll fit well with the way we want to play with pace and with speed, getting our guys out running the wings. And he had more coast-to-coast plays than I think anybody in this draft. Averaged almost 8 rebounds and almost 4 assists per game. On top of that, he scored 20 points. And, you know, again, a guy that you watch his game over the 4 years he was at Boise, how it evolved and how he continued to improve. And you look at his three-point shot from his freshman year to his senior year and how his numbers went up every season. So two very versatile players that I'm really excited about adding to our team.
As far as what he had to say about Hutchinson and Wendell Carter Jr., obviously he also cited the whole versatility aspect of both of the players. But the key that I thought was interesting with him when talking about Chandler Hutchinson is that he really liked his ability when looking at Hutch's tape. His ability to be a rebounder at the wing position and not only get those rebounds, but be the guy who can grab the rebound and then immediately push the pace, getting the ball down the floor, because we all know that that's the first and most important thing for Fred when it comes to getting his guys into the offense that he wants them to play.
Yeah, I like that too. And I think citing the fact that Chandler Hutchinson's defensive rebound percentage was off the charts compared to any other wings. And you look at that, and you look at also too, the fact that if Chandler Hutchinson's not going to come into the Bulls and be a scorer right away, at least you have a guy that's going to push the floor on the opposite end and try to facilitate in the offense. Like, we talk about Chris Dunn being a facilitator. That's great, but you need more than one guy to facilitate your offense, and I don't know if Zach LaVine can necessarily do that right now. I'd rather see him be able to spot up and score and be the guy that's getting facilitated too, rather than being the offensive facilitator. And you look at the Wendell Carter Jr. too. He's a guy that they've cited multiple times that you can play in and out with. And he's a guy that we've touched on multiple times about his passing numbers compared to other bigs that were taken in the first round. So I look at both of those things, and even if Hutchinson isn't a scorer right off the bat or he struggles a little bit there, I think they're going to be definitely more impressed, especially Bulls fans are going to be more impressed with his defense and his ability to push the pace than anything else. And look, both of these guys have room to grow too. They talked about that as far as the rookies, and like, not every pick is a polished product, but I think more so in Wendell Carter's case, he's more of the sure bet than either one of these guys are. But I really think, I think Bulls fans, after you let the whole connections thing blow over, you're going to be pleasantly surprised with Chandler Hutchison's game. And I was really surprised how well-spoken he was, too. And he seems like a high character. Like, the joke is, high character is like one of those buzzwords or those buzz phrases that the Bulls use all the time. But just listening to the both of these guys and listening to some of the interviews that they did post-drafts, I like them. I think their character is going to be high, and it's only going to be a plus for the locker room.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to what you said about Hutchison being another ball handler for this Bulls offense and some of Fred's comments from earlier today, that was another thing that I thought was interesting, is that Fred said, when you look at some of the more successful teams in this league, teams that were making deep playoff runs this season, they all had one big thing in common, and that was having multiple ball handlers on the floor who can create off the dribble, create their own shot, create shots for their teammates. And I mean, you in the West, you got, you know, Steph and KD, two very good ball handlers. You had the Rockets with Harden and CP3. Even the Pelicans, who surprised people and got out of the first round, they had Jrue Holiday and Rondo. The Jazz, Donovan Mitchell and Ricky Rubio. In the East, it's the Celtics with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And the Sixers, Ben Simmons and TJ McConnell. And like, LeBron's Cavs are the lone exception to teams that made deep playoff runs that really only had one true quality ball handler on their team, especially in their starting five. So it's good to see that Fred recognizes that Hutchison does have that ability. I know basically a lot of fans are looking at him as just a 3-and-D wing whose three-point percentage got a little bit better in his junior and senior seasons compared to his first 2 years at Boise State, and a guy who has the length and the wingspan to play defense at that spot and be versatile on the defensive end. But he can, if you go back and watch some of Hutchison's games at Boise State, he can put the ball on the floor. And I think Fred knows that, and he's excited about that.
I want to get to exactly what Chandler Hutchison and Wendell Carter said as far as the questions they were asked. One thing I want to point about Wendell Carter and talking about what he feels like is going to be a strength for him in the NBA, he touched on it really quickly, and he said he felt like the NBA is more of a one-on-one game than it ever has been before. And in some aspects, I can agree with him, but I'm kind of excited what he feels like is going, like how that's going to be a strength for him. If he's talking specifically about how he can match up against other big men, or is it how he can switch off and maybe guard at the perimeter and guard a guard and still be able to stay in front of him. That type of confidence, and especially going along with, I think, a theme of today was not really having the ability to show his offense in college, and also attached to that is just being and having a winning mentality. And I think you bring in a guy like that, it's all good things. And he's going to be playing in summer league, so I'm going to be excited for him to not only get some reps there, but we're going to really see some of those things maybe expand. But I like that he's got the winner's mentality, and I know that's, it might be cheesy right now, and every player is going to say that when they're drafted in the top of the lottery, but just some of the things that I've read about this kid and watched and what he did at Duke, it seems like that theme and that timeline seems to be what he wants to take into the NBA at next. And I don't know what you thought about him specifically talking about his game was, whether it was the one-on-one being able to match up with guys, or if he's talking about specifically on the offensive end where he feels like his game underneath is a little bit more polished. But anything that jumped out from you as far as Wendell Carter goes, I know he was a little bit short and sweet too at the press conference.
Yeah, he was a bit succinct with his answers. The more he gets used to media, the more he'll get comfortable with it, I think. But I definitely did also take note of the fact that he made that comment about 1v1 and how maybe he didn't necessarily get that many opportunities to showcase what he could do one-on-one on the offensive end, specifically working out of the low post, working on the block, because Bagley was the center point of that front court offense for Duke. But that was something else that Gar mentioned when talking about analyzing Wendell Carter Jr. and all of his tape, was saying there are a lot of things we liked when we watched him play in games at Duke, but we also watched him in practice, and we saw some things that he was able to do and some facets to his game that you could see in practice that maybe he didn't get the opportunity to showcase in his one season at Duke. And go back to high school, and he won a state title his senior year, and he was the guy offensively for his high school team and was like a 30-point-per-game scorer. So Carter Jr. does have that offensive abilities working from the post, and Gar mentioned the fact that he's already pretty adept and skilled working not only with the right hand but also shooting with the left hand when he's, you know, working on post-up moves on either side. And then the other interesting answer to me from Wendell Carter Jr. this morning when talking about the specifics of his game was the strength he has as a rebounder. And I think that that's what he knows right now can immediately come in and be his best asset for this Bulls team, kind of taking some of that responsibility and burden off of Lauri Markkanen in the front court. This is a kid who, despite only being 6'10", had a 13.5 rebounds per 40 minutes on his one season at Duke. That's a better rebounding rate than his teammate Marvin Bagley. That's better rebounding rate than Jaren Jackson Jr. And it's almost only a few tenths off the rebounding rates of DeAndre Ayton and Mohamed Bamba, two guys who are significantly taller and or have bigger wingspans than Wendell Carter Jr. So he's got the workhorse mentality on the glass. I think that's going to be a benefit for the Bulls on both sides of the court.
You had two really good rebounders, and one being your seventh pick overall in Wendell Carter Jr., and him coming in talking about his strength being rebounding is number one. We also talked about the defensive rebounding numbers for Chandler Hutchison and what he could do overall at the wing position. I'll look at what the Bulls did last season, 44.7 rebounds per game. That was sixth best in the NBA. And sure, you had Robin Lopez out on the floor for a long time. Bobby Portis rebounded better than we thought. Lauri Markkanen's actually a better rebounder than we initially thought he was going to be. And plus, you look at other guys too around here. Chris Dunn, when he was healthy, he was rebounding at a better rate than we thought he was going to. So you look at that, and you had two quality rebounders, one being a big man that you don't foresee Robin Lopez being here for that much longer. You add that to the type of depth as far as rebounding goes. The only other teams that were better at rebounding than the Bulls were last season, the 76ers, the Lakers, the Hornets, the Trailblazers, and the Thunder. So I look at that, and you're adding strength to an already pretty solid strength to this Bulls team, and you could become an elite rebounding team. So you add that plus the offensive game from Wendell Carter Jr., and I think the potential upside in Chandler Hutchison's game, when I think we're going to get a glimpse into that in Summer League as far as whether or not Chandler Hutchison is a guy that can take over games and score at this next level. And while it's against other NBA prospects, I think we're going to be able to at least get a decent look at what his offense might be. And if he tears it up, I think the upside is higher than maybe some Bulls fans initially think here.
Yeah, I think a lot of Bulls fans are just immediately turned off by the Hutchison pick because of the draft promise, right? Saying like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that they picked this guy at 22 and like just basically followed through on knowing this guy and liking this guy and not expanding their horizons in the draft. And also, he's a four-year guy. He's 22. It's a classic Garpax pick. And I don't see him being 22 is a downside, like a lot of NBA fans do. I'm sorry. I think what it means is that he's going to be able to come in and play closer to the level of NBA veterans better and more so than some of those young one-and-done guys. You know, Wendell Carter just turned 19 like a couple months ago. And like, if you're going to make any criticism for the front office from this draft night, it's the fact that maybe they didn't do their due diligence at 22 because they seemed so keen on getting Chandler Hutchison, and it kind of folds into that narrative that the Bulls and their front office do this a lot. They zero in on a guy that they like, and maybe Bulls fans think that that means that they don't scout other players as much as they should, which is why a lot of Bulls fans were pissed off about Jordan Bell last year. A lot of Bulls fans upset that they didn't try to get back into the second round. And you and I talked about this on Friday, how they held their immediate post-draft press conference while the second round was still going on. I think there's some validity to that criticism of this front office and the fact that, yeah, Hutchison was their guy that they really liked at 22. But I don't know if you can make an argument that some people are saying he was a reach at 22, but knowing the Bulls really needed to add a wing at that spot in the with the 22nd pick, I think he was, and you know, and I've talked before about how Jacob Evans was still on the board. He ended up going 28 to Golden State. I really like Jacob Evans. Outside of that, like, people were arguing like Cade Bates-Diop or maybe D'Anthony Melton from USC. Those guys both slid into the late 40s in the second round. So it's not like the Bulls passed on some guy that was immediately swooped up, you know, one or two picks later. So you can criticize them for maybe having a narrow line of sight because of the whole Hutchison draft promise thing. But that doesn't mean that Hutchison's not going to be a good player who fits in this team right now.
Yeah, and the other thing that Hutchison said too, and I don't know if this was, I don't know if the front office liked him sharing this detail or if anybody else caught this, but he said the Bulls had been scouting and looking at him since his sophomore year at Boise State. So if that's true, then they've had their eye on him for, what, 3 years?
Well, yeah. I mean, Paxson said that in that press conference right after the draft happened. He said when asked about the whole draft promise thing, he didn't necessarily say no. He didn't deny it, but he didn't say yes. He said, we scouted him early. We scouted him often. He knew that we liked him. This is basically admitting, yeah, we promised that he was there at 22, we'd take him. But so as far as the specifics of when exactly they started scouting him, Paxson kind of alluded to that right after the draft happened, saying, yeah, we started scouting this kid really early. So I don't think Hutchison necessarily leaked any new information when he said that.
Another thing was he was asked to, just to kind of wrap this up, he was asked about what it takes for a guy to go from playing and scoring for an average of 4 points a game to the type of season that he had his senior year. I thought the answer he gave was pretty great. And you look at a player like that and you look at other players in history who have come in and had to work that hard being under-recruited. You look at the recruiting numbers from Chandler Hutchison, and when he went to Boise State, he was ranked 128th is the national ranking before he signed there. He was only a 3-star recruit. He was the 31st best forward at his position and the 12th best player in California. So you go from being a kind of a 3-star, really a nobody. If you're outside the top 100, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense when those types of guys get to the NBA. That's not the norm. So he was asked about that and he gave a great response. And I think outside of anything else that might be pushing you opposite of what the Bulls did here at 22 with Chandler Hutchison, I think you got to look at the kid's work ethic and going from, you know, being a 4-point type of player to a 20-point scorer on average in 4 years in college. I had this argument with multiple people who said, who cares? You know, he didn't play well as a freshman, and yeah, it took 4 years to get to that point. I think you take that and you spin it positively. Like, if he's able to work his way from 4 points a game to 20 points a game and be a completely different player 4 years in his final year, I think he can make that same transition to the NBA. I think people who are able and showcase it and show that they work hard, I think that's going to be able to translate to the Bulls. And maybe he doesn't have the skill set right away like some of these other guys did in the first round. But I think the work ethic, too, shouldn't go overpassed. And I know as much as that's a buzzword and the Bulls like to use that a lot, I think there's a lot of value in that, and a value in a guy that's willing to work hard. And I just go back to guys like Victor Oladipo, who was under-recruited, ended up being a lottery pick, sort of turned out to be, like, people were talking about him potentially being a bust. And then look at him. He turned it around after, what, 4 seasons at 3 different teams. So I look at other guys that are willing to just work hard and be able to sort of block it out. And we had one guy like that in the 30th pick in Jimmy Butler. Look how hard he worked and look at where he's at now.
Yeah, that was one other thing that I thought was interesting from Hutchison's comments was he was asked about his coach at Boise State, and he said something. He told a little story about how his coach at Boise State talked to him as he was making his way into his upperclassman years as a junior and a senior to become to take a more prominent role as a leader on his college team, and that how he's hoping that he can kind of use some of those leadership skills that he learned as a 4-year college player and immediately translate them to the NBA.
I mean, really being a 4-year player, just the growth, really just having that opportunity that he gave me, just to trust me early on, giving me more of a leash than really early players do, and when having that four-year goal in mind of a player that's probably going to play for 4 years. He just continued to stick with me and help me grow from trusting me on the court, but also, you know, trusting me to he came to me to really talk to these younger guys on how it means to play at a bigger, on the floor with some more competition, as we continue to play against some better competition. Some of these guys to look up to me, he gave me that responsibility, and just, you know, with me growing too, he helped me. He gave me that responsibility to help some of the younger guys grow as well.
So that's obviously going back to the high character talking point that Paxson and Foreman are so excited about with these two guys. But Hutchison specifically, as a 22-year-old, he's going to be older than a couple of his Bulls teammates his rookie season. And this is something that you and I have talked about as far as like who are going to be the leaders of this team when Robin Lopez moves on, when Justin Holiday moves on. You know, Fred is the leader as the coach, but you need the players leading from the locker room. You need the players leading on the floor during timeouts, close, late games. It sounds like Hutchison is already confident in his leadership abilities as a guy who was a four-year player and took big strides as a junior and a senior. I think that is going to be a factor right away for a rookie who's going to come in and probably get significant minutes. He's not going to be afraid to speak his mind in that locker
room. Look, and I don't doubt either that Wendell Carter Jr. can be a quiet leader, too, in that locker room. It might sound like he doesn't say much, but when he's talking, it's all quality. And you listen to the words that he says, and very well spoken too. And I think coming in as a 19-year-old, I think he's going to be highly regarded by other players right away. You just look at his work ethic as well. And, you know, you want to talk about star potential in Carter or Chandler. And yeah, there's probably not a lot of high hope that either one of these guys are going to be a superstar, maybe the way that 1 through 5 is shook out in the draft. But you had two guys that are willing to come in and work hard every single day and add to this core. And, you know, chemistry can do a lot of things for a team. I'm not saying that, you know, you should bank all of your hopes on chemistry and this locker room working out, but I think the Bulls fans are mostly happy with the picks, and maybe outside of a few fans that wanted to see them take a swing and a miss, and I did too. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised, especially in this first year, of where things might go with both of these players.
That's the hope. That's the optimistic hope right now. I know a lot of Bulls fans, people sending in texts and voicemails to us on draft night. There are certainly a number of Bulls fans who are not convinced about these two additions to the roster, but I think you and I are both trying to look at the positives right now, and there are plenty to choose from.
We got
to
take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're going to do just that thing, let you guys listen to all the voicemails that we were left here, post-draft reactions, kind of just sum up what some of the reaction is from Bulls fans and play all those voicemails, get to as many as we can on today's episode. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
What's up, fellas? It's Mike again. I had some free time, so I thought I'd leave another voicemail. So it's post-draft. The Bulls selected Wendell Carter Jr. and Chandler Hutchison with their 7th and 22nd pick. And I got to tell you, you know, I was bitching on Twitter last night thinking, God, these guys, they just don't take any risks. You know, they don't swing for the fences. They refuse to do it. Some guy made fun of me. He said, obviously, you forgot about Tyrus Thomas, but that was almost 15 years ago, you know. They just play it so freaking safe, you know, and it drives me nuts. They pick these high floor guys, you know. It seems is what they're, like, always attracted to. But I had an epiphany, and it made me feel a little bit better about all this. So the way I see it, Philadelphia had some high draft picks. They got some guys. And now, you know, Philadelphia's got a team that's appealing to a free agent like a LeBron or, you know, whomever might want to travel out there and play with this, you know, exciting young core of guys. And in my mind, I think what the Bulls are doing is smart, because when you draft a player that's a high-risk, high-reward guy, if he doesn't pan out, you are fucked. And those early draft picks are so valuable, right? So if you take guys that you know are going to be solid additions to the core of the team, and you can build something that's exciting, something that's appealing, you can go out and sign a free agent that's proven himself rather than taking a risk with the 7th pick. You know, you don't have number 1 or number 2 where it's more or less a much less risky place to be gambling the future of your franchise. You know, we had the 7th pick. We had the 22nd pick. So we added solid guys that I think will make a meaningful impact on the team, and hopefully, down the road, we can add a few guys that have proven themselves and make this an attractive spot for you know, big name guys to want to come and play with an exciting young core of guys rather than swinging for the fences and totally fucking stuff up. Because imagine a gaping hole we would have if they swung and missed. If they say they got a Trey Young or a Michael Porter and he ends up being a disaster. I mean, that would have been, you know, I mean, they're saying that Wendell Carter Jr. is a Al Horford clone. I mean, shit, that, I'll take that at 7 all day long, especially next to Lowry. So anyway, that's my 10 cents. Feel free to elaborate and talk amongst yourselves. Appreciate you taking the call as always. See you, fellas.
All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, that voicemail left for us by Mike. Thanks again for the voicemail. Our first of a few post-voicemail reactions here. You can leave those for us at 331-979-1369. Text and voicemails all there. So if you want to hear yourself on the show, want to interact with us or ask us a question, you can leave it there at 331-979-1369. This is something that I've gone back and forth, Matt, over the weekend, just thinking about the Bulls pick here. And I convinced myself that I really like Wendell Carter Jr., and I think the fit is going to be more surprising than anything, especially in his first year. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised, and more so in the way that even with fans talking about how Carter's ceiling versus floor, and sure, those are labels that he's already been put with. I look back to Lauri Markkanen's pick last year and the labels that were put on him, and he unjustifiably broke all of those labels within the first 3 months of playing in the season. So I can understand the outlook as far as Wendell Carter Jr. goes and whether or not he's going to be a star, whether or not the Bulls need him to be a star. And that's kind of the question that I've found myself on Sunday night was, do the Bulls really need Wendell Carter Jr. to be a star in order to win? And I go back and forth with myself and thinking about this, or do they just need him to be a really, really good player for a long time? So I guess I kind of want to toss that question at you, Matt. Do the Bulls feel like they need Wendell Carter Jr. to be that star in order to compete for a championship? Or do you feel like him being a borderline all-star and playing 10 plus years and having a productive role on this team can benefit just as much?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on who's around him. Obviously, you can't win an NBA title without a superstar or maybe two these days. I mean, look back at the most recent title winners. The Warriors have two superstars, and even before KD arrived and they won their first one, they had one and a bevy of all-stars around him. LeBron James, biggest superstar in the league right now, most recent title winner outside of Golden State. San Antonio, Tim Duncan, superstar. Tony Parker, all-star. Like, you need star power. That being said, I think Mike, you know, who said he had an epiphany after he was so pissed off that the Bulls played it safe instead of swinging for the fences, where they were drafting at 7, and whether or not you're pissed off that they didn't mortgage the farm to trade up a few spots to take Luka Doncic or whoever is a different conversation. But picking at 7, they chose to, quote-unquote, play it safe with Wendell Carter Jr. instead of Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. may have been the highest ceiling, highest potential upside, greatest likelihood of turning into a superstar player that was on the board for the Bulls at 7. But he also had all sorts of horrifying red flags. 6 teams ahead of the Bulls passed on him. 6 picks after the Bulls chose Wendell Carter, he was still on the board. So in this specific draft, in this specific instance, I think the Bulls did the right thing by not taking the high-risk, high-reward guy because of the specifics of what was attached to that. They were very ugly, horrifying risks. And this Bulls team can get better, and this Bulls team can be in a better position today than they were a week ago before this draft, taking a guy like Wendell Carter Jr., who might not be a superstar potential kind of player. If the Bulls can find a superstar, perennial all-star kind of player somewhere else, and Wendell Carter Jr. is a helpful addition piece of a roster that is still young and developing and will have years to turn themselves into contenders, maybe Lauri Markkanen is that guy who turns into a superstar. We don't know. It's possible. It's not impossible. I wouldn't say it's necessarily super likely right now that Markkanen turns into a superstar, but an all-star, obviously that potential is there. So the Bulls didn't get that superstar guy, as far as we know, with Wendell Carter Jr. That doesn't mean that he can't be a very good and a very important piece to this new core that they're building.
I agree with you, and I would just put some numbers behind as far as where picks go and their likelihood to turn into all-stars. You look at since 1980, and you look at the first three picks in the drafts, number one being a 77% chance that that turns into being an all-star. You look at the second pick overall, that drops down to 34%, and that's kind of that's quite a difference in between picks one and two. But then you look at the third pick, and that's almost 49% of players end up being all-stars. So I look at that, and the first three picks, you're getting 53.4% of the time you're getting an all-star at that pick. It drops off a little bit between four and five. I look at four and five, and you're getting about a 30% chance that either one of those picks turns out to be an all-star. And that's just going based off of the picks before and whether or not those guys have been all-stars before. Then the drop-off between seven or six through eight after four and five is only about 20%. So the reality and the likelihood of Wendell Carter Jr. being an all-star is not that great. 20% is not a great chance, but you've seen it happen in the past. You look at who was taken at seven before, Stephen Curry being the most logical one there. But you also got guys like Harrison Barnes and Greg Monroe and Luol Deng, Corey Brewer, Eric Gordon, and Kirk Heinrich, who've served as valuable role players, and two of those guys played on this Bulls team for a long time. So you're getting guys that are going to be quality players for a long time, and whether or not they're going to be all-stars or meet or succeed past their expectations, I still think is up for them to prove. And a guy that's 19 years old, I think we can give him a long leash of whether or not this pick turns out, and he's going to have a lot of years on his rookie contract, 4 or 5 years to really figure that out. So all-star potential, I don't think necessarily, at least what the numbers say, is really in the ballpark right now. 20% is a far chance. But then you look at Lauri Markkanen and the expectations that he passed last season alone. So I don't think he needs to be an all-star in order for this Bulls team to be competitive or to one day be back in the finals. But then you're going to be a Bulls fan who's hoping that they can swing and hit on a free agent. I don't know if I want to be a part of that conversation as well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there.
Hey guys, Devin from Connecticut here. Just want to give my immediate reaction on the pick while I'm waiting for the Sixers. They're on the clock. Now, I was crossing all my fingers and all my toes to that Orlando wouldn't pick Mo Bamba, but you know what? That's me being a little bit selfish because Wendell Carter is a great pick. I'm so excited for next year, so excited for Summer League, and so excited for this number 22 pick. Going to stick around, going to keep pacing the floors, drink a few more Guinness, and let's see what they pick at number 22. But yeah, super excited, guys. Let's hear what you guys have to think about Wendell Carter Jr., all right? Love the show. Talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for the voicemail, Devin. Yeah, I think you're not alone in being disappointed when it looked for a second like the Bulls might actually have Mo Bamba slide to them at seven after Atlanta made that trade to take Trae Young at five. Because a lot of people were considering Orlando going with a point guard, but a lot of people also thought that the point guard they would take, the point guard that they really liked, was Trae Young. So with Trae off the board, obviously Orlando wasn't high enough on Colin Sexton or, you know, Shai Gilgeous Alexander or anybody like that, more so than Bamba, to pass on Bamba, even though their front court is kind of already overcrowded in Orlando.
Maybe starting five front court guys next season.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it is kind of a disappointment. Devin, you're not alone there. It would have been interesting if the Bulls had their choice between Bamba and Carter, who they'd go with. I think they would have gone with Bamba, who maybe is a bit more of a risk than Carter, but might have a higher upside, and you know that tantalizing 7'10 wingspan. Because there were reports that Bamba was one of the names mentioned as we were hearing the Bulls were inquiring about trading up. Trading up for Bamba, not trading up for Carter. So they probably would have taken Bamba if he was there at seven. But I think you're right. You can still be excited about Carter Jr. even though you missed out on Mo Bamba. You know, we'll never know. In an alternate universe, what would this Bulls rebuild become if we got Mo Bamba instead? You know, it's tough to say. It'll be interesting to see how his career stretches out compared to Wendell Carter Jr.'s, but it's all about how you look at it. And you can be a glass half full kind of guy, or you can be a glass half empty kind of fan. And I think you and I, Jordan, are both trying to be glass half full kind of people with this Wendell Carter Jr. selection. Although I must admit, when that trade went down and we found out that Trae Young was going at five, I was like, oh my God, we might actually get Bamba. And I was really excited about it.
So was I. And I think just the potential upside there is why I was so excited. But you look at two, I think it shouldn't go it shouldn't go under talked about either, about potential fit of where these guys go too. I think that plays into a factor of a lot of prospects and whether or not they can release that next level in their game. You look at Jason Tatum going to Boston. Should he have went somewhere else besides there? You think he has that type of productive season last year? You look at prospects in the past who have gone super high and the fit as far as a team and an organization doesn't really work out. I think for Carter being here, especially over maybe Mo Bamba, I think Bulls fans are going to be pleased right away with what Carter's going to bring. And as far as Mo Bamba goes, I don't know if I can convince myself that this fan base would be willing to wait 3 or 4 years to see this kid actually blossom. And I'm struggling to figure out whether or not he's even going to succeed in Orlando with all the movement that they have and all the big men that they have on that roster too, and no guards to play along with that. I don't know. And so that's why I look at the pick of the Bulls made too, as far as fit goes. I know before the draft we said they're going to take the best talent available, and I still think Wendell Carter Jr. is the best talent available at number 7. And hey, they didn't swing for the fences, but I also don't think Wendell Carter Jr. was necessarily the safest pick at number 7. I could still go back to Mikal Bridges at 10 and say that he, if they would have taken him at 7, that was probably the safest option, because not only was he not the best player available at 7, but he was the safest and the biggest need for the Bulls there. So keep that in mind as well. So I go back to Carter as far as fit goes. I think this is the best role possible, and we talked about it before when he was here for the private workout. He seemed so excited to play alongside Lauri Markkanen, and having the experience of playing alongside a guy that maybe is potentially seen as the star first as far as his time next to Marvin Bagley, I think that's only going to benefit Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen both. Markkanen from an offensive standpoint, and really Carter as far as getting his feet wet in the first year of the season. So I think Bulls fans are going to be surprised at how productive he is actually in the first season, rather than maybe taking a project like Mo Bamba, who might not start to flourish till 3 or 4 years into the league.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Robin Lopez this coming season. I think we're entrenched in our belief right now that he will be around to start the season, unless the Bulls get some kind of amazing, too good to pass up trade offer this summer. I think they want him around to at least start the season and mentor Wendell Carter Jr., but they might look to deal Lopez if they can get something for him before the deadline, and you might see Wendell Carter Jr. becoming the Bulls starting center before the 2018-19 season is over. If not, it's pretty likely that if they don't trade Rolo at the deadline next season, they won't re-sign him beyond that, and his contract is expiring. So at the very latest, you're talking about Wendell Carter Jr. being the starting center alongside Markkanen in his second season.
Pretty disappointing, the Bulls tonight. You know, if they were building a house, I'm pretty sure it would have nine foot floors and 3 foot ceilings. You know, I'll be shocked if both of these players combine to score 20 points for their career. I mean, do we even need to watch the draft? I'm pretty sure we knew who they were going to pick 2 months ago. Just wish they would have pointed up and gone big or gone home. You know, at least take Kevin Knox at 7. I mean, rather than take someone who's going to give me 12 and 8, you know, that's not so great. So that's how I feel. I was pretty disappointed, but not as disappointed as the Hawks fans at the draft party I was at. So talk to you later. Love the show. Bye.
All right, thanks for the voicemail from the 630. Somebody who wasn't necessarily pleased with what the Bulls did at 7-22, and there's fans out there that who aren't pleased with it either, and fans that probably listen to this show as well. So I can't necessarily say that he's wrong at, you know, talking about a team who builds with 9 foot floors and 3 foot ceilings. Like, that's kind of true in the fact that what the Bulls decide to take as far as historically goes. I think they're getting a bad rap for staying at number 7 instead of moving up. And I think more so, you go back to what John Paxson had said just in this player introduction too. He has tended to put Portis and Valentine in as part of that core, when not only just talking about the, you know, the core three that we talked about last summer, but he's been throwing Portis and Valentine into that conversation more and more, as we saw at the end of the season and now into the offseason. I've heard him say it multiple times. So those five guys, it seems like maybe trying to move up at number four to Memphis would have had to include at least Portis and probably Valentine too, and they didn't seem like they were too thrilled about parting with the number 22 pick as well. And I don't know if Chandler Parsons also had to be a part of that conversation as well, so just wasn't a good mix for the Bulls to try and trade up to number four. And look, Jaren Jackson Jr. could turn out to be a multi-level all-star and a superstar and the definition of the modern's big, but to sacrifice the farm, like Matt has said multiple times, and the way the front office has talked about, they didn't want to do that. And I think it's more evident now than it ever has been before when Portis and Valentine's name are thrown into that mix. I can't argue with you in saying that they do tend to choose the guys with the higher floors as far as the higher ceilings go. And look, the Knox pick too, I think he's going to be a good fit in New York. I don't know if I would have taken the risk at number seven there. I'm glad that they took Wendell Carter Jr. over him. He's a proven guy. He's got a guy that's played against and next to other stars, so he knows how to fit that mold and that role. And I don't know if I was confident enough to take him at number seven as far as the production goes at Kentucky. So we'll see. I'm glad that they decided not to choose fit over best player available, and that's exactly what Paxson said, and he was truthful on that.
Yeah, I don't know if this caller is talking about Kevin Knox when he's talking about wishing that they had, you know, go big or go home instead of playing it safe. Really? You wanted them at seven to take Kevin Knox and think that's a big swing for a potential, you know, star player more so than taking Wendell Carter Jr.? To me, Kevin Knox at seven would have been a terrible reach. Like, yeah, he might have the most upside of some of those top-tier wings that we had been talking about the Bulls maybe taking at seven, Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges, and Kevin Knox, that trio. I'm sorry, but I know he's the youngest of the group, and most people think that that means he has the highest upside, but I don't see it there. I see a huge risk with Kevin Knox were the Bulls to take him at seven. I understand the frustration of this caller and a lot of Bulls fans who are, you know, so sick of this front office for quote-unquote playing it safe all the time. But, I mean, you can be frustrated with a front office that you deem to be one that never takes risks if you think that it's going to never result in them getting this organization back to where they want to be. But last Thursday night, they made the right decision when they took Wendell Carter Jr. at seven. Again, talking about not trading up aside, because that to me was the swing for the fences choice they could have made. And you were talking about they didn't want to take on Parsons' contract. They didn't want to sacrifice a first-round pick in 2019, which was the price. They didn't want to sacrifice the 22 pick because they were really excited after getting that in the Nico trade to add not one but two young players to this rebuild. So the reasons are all laid out there for you as to why they didn't make some big, giant move to move up. And let's be honest, you can be frustrated that they play it safe. But in the examples of when the Bulls, this Bulls front office does take risks in the draft, what's the most recent risk? I mean, I don't really think that Markkanen was a risk. I think everybody knew that he was a top 10 talent in that lottery, and where they were when they traded up to get the number 7 pick, he made the most sense. I don't, even though they may not have scouted him extensively, I don't see that as a risk. The most recent risk I think that they have made is going back to 2014 when they traded up and gave up two players to get Doug McDermott. That was a risky move. And how did that pan out? Not too well. When they draft safe, they tend to draft well. So I understand the frustration, and I know that a lot of fans wish that they would be sexier with the way that they operate on draft night. But in this case, Carter Jr. was hands down the smartest choice.
I don't think you can double dip either, as far as, like you were talking about, the swing for the fences move is trading up. I don't think you can double dip that take as far as saying, like, they didn't take a swing and a miss, or they tried at number seven either, because those are two different things. I'm with you on the Knox point too. Like, that's a complete reach, and I think that in itself isn't the swing for the fences type of move that we were talking about pre-draft. So you add all that together, it just it made no sense for the Bulls at seven, and they picked the one guy that they said if they were going to stay at number seven was the best talent available, and I think that was Wendell Carter Jr. I don't know who you could argue there. Like, don't even come to me with Michael Porter Jr. as far as that argument goes, because our next caller, which we'll get into, we'll talk specifically about why I think the Bulls passed on Porter, and this will be the final conversation that we have on it, just to clarify why we think they didn't try to move up for him at 14 or try to move for him or try to take him at 7.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is DVS. The draft, man. The Bulls made the expected picks. I personally was rooting for Wendell Carter Jr. in that first pick. And for the 7th, we 22nd, we already knew they were going with Chandler Hutchinson as a very telegraphed. But I've been arguing with people all day online about why we didn't take the risk on Michael Porter Jr., which personally I'm looking at that. And the way he slid, those medicals that came out of the Bulls must have said something. So can you talk to my fellow fans and let them know why that pick of Wendell and Chandler Hutchinson, even though it wasn't the swinging for the fences pick, it probably was the best pick for the franchise because we really need some type of solidity. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, DVS. You're right, buddy. This is how I felt. The more we learned about Michael Porter Jr.'s medicals, the more that started to get leaked out on draft day leading up to draft night from Woj, among others, is that the most recent medicals from MPJ just flat out did not look good. Alarm bells all over the place. That's why you saw six teams pass on Porter Jr. ahead of the Bulls at 7. And that's why you saw him still on the board all the way down to 14 when the Nuggets finally swooped him up. Like, you're talking about playing it safe or swinging for the fences. High risk, high reward versus high floor. This, and you know, and it is a case-by-case basis. And we've talked about this front office and when they do choose to make risks when compared to when they play it safe. It's a case-by-case basis. In this case, playing it safe was absolutely the better way to go. And I hope that Michael Porter Jr. turns out to be a great NBA player. I mean, selfishly, I kind of hope not, if I'm being totally honest. I want the Bulls to be proven right on their decision to pass on him. But even if Porter Jr. does turn things around and defy the odds, and all of a sudden his back magically heals, and he never has a back problem again over a long, successful 15-plus year NBA career, good for him, but also at the time, on the clock, on draft night, with the information they had, the Bulls were one of a dozen teams to say, nah, no thanks, that's too scary. That's a risk we are not willing to take right now. So even if he does prove all the doubters wrong, on draft night, it was smart to pass on him.
And look, whatever they had received as far as his medicals go on draft night, where it made his stock slip even farther, I go back to even the Bulls being the ones to do his medicals, you know, before his pro day went on. So if the Bulls said that they had no interest or weren't even looking for him at number seven, maybe they saw something before they released it to everybody else out there. And we never really heard a definitive connection between him and the Bulls. It was more so all of these piecemealing, kind of connecting the dots situation, more so than anything else. So maybe that was just the fact that they didn't even like him to begin with, you know, coming in. And he didn't really fit that mold either. Like, he didn't really fit the Bulls mold in any way, which possibility. You talked about, too, I want to go back to the last caller as well and kind of mix this in as my final thought. Matt, you said that you don't feel like Lauri Markkanen was really a risk for what the Bulls did last season. And if you're going to be in somebody who is the argument that says, you know, Lauri Markkanen was a risk at seven and it paid off because they didn't scout him, you can't turn around and tell me that this year, as far as a fan goes, if you're thinking in this way, you can't turn around and tell me that the Bulls haven't taken risks in the past and it hasn't panned out. Or just from post-Butler, I think you take what you've learned from post-Butler in their moves now, they've taken some risks. And I think it's panned out more often than it has over the last 18 months than maybe we could talk about in the last 5 years as far as risks go. So I don't think you can complain about the Bulls not scouting some of these guys and then turn around and say, well, they didn't scout him. And then, yeah, Lauri Markkanen turned into being a good prospect. Like, I think Bulls fans need to pick their battles as far as what they wanted. And I don't think Bulls fans really understood what they wanted here at number seven.
Bulls, let's be honest, Bulls fans are not good at picking their battles, Jordan.
So Michael Porter Jr. to me is not the risk that you wanted to look to take. I don't know what those medicals said as far as draft night goes, and I don't think anybody outside of those organizations really know what that said. But to me, like you had said, over a dozen teams passing on him after being a potentially consensus number one pick and having back surgery, I think that was the nail in the coffin. And at 14, the Denver Nuggets didn't really have anything to lose. Like, the Denver Nuggets are on the cusp of being a playoff team. If they have to shut him down for a year, that's the best move possible. And if that's who they end up with at 14 and he turns out to be a good player, that's a double win for them. But if he doesn't turn out to be anything at all, I don't think it's really that big of a risk for somebody at number 14. We've talked about prospects in the late lottery. Sure, you can hit on guys like Donovan Mitchell, but more cases than not, those guys tend to flame out, especially after the first, what, 5-6 picks? You talk about productivity in the first round, especially in those later picks. You hardly ever get productive, solid players that stay in the league for a long time. So talking about star value between 10 and 14, the Denver Nuggets did what they needed to do, and I think they're going to shut him down for the year. But no way in any scenario I think that it was a good idea for the Bulls to take him at 7, and if that's who you're arguing over Wendell Carter Jr., I can't really help you.
Yeah, and just to go back to your thing about Bulls fans and picking their battles when they're coming after the front office. And yep, here goes me putting on my Garpax devil's advocate hat again.
Are you going to play devil's advocate?
Yes. I love it. All right. So here it is. I've got my Garpax devil's advocate hat on.
Are you going to play devil's advocate?
Talking about, you know, picking and choosing your battles with the front office. Say the Bulls had swung for the fences, so to speak, with what we were talking about earlier, and traded up to 3 or 4 to get the guy that they really wanted, whether that was Luka Doncic or Jaren Jackson Jr. So we know that that would have cost them at least their 22 pick and a first rounder in 2019, at least, and probably also taken on money. There is, I guarantee you, a contingent of Bulls fans out there who are the staunch ride or die FireGar Packs crew that would say, oh my God, I can't believe we gave up more draft picks. We're rebuilding. The last thing we can afford to do is give up draft picks. Because what do the Garpax haters love to harp on? The fact that this front office does not properly value draft picks while rebuilding. That's why they were screaming bloody murder about the whole Jordan Bell thing last year, right? And the fact that this front office never values second round picks. They don't value draft picks. If they were to move up a few spots and pay that hefty price tag of sacrificing a first rounder this year and a first rounder next year, whether or not they were excited about moving up to get that guy, whoever it was, I guarantee you those same people would be saying, I can't believe they gave up more draft picks. Jeez, for the love of God. So I'm sorry, but okay, taking off the hat now, pick your battles. I don't know how you are and where you stand, which side of the fence you are on as far as whether you wanted them to trade up and make that happen last Thursday night. And if you're disappointed they didn't, I understand that. I'm kind of disappointed they couldn't find a deal too. But you can't trash them for staying at 7 and taking Wendell Carter Jr. if going back in time, switching things around, you would fast forward back to now, trash them for whatever it was they ended up paying to move up a few spots. Because you can't criticize them for everything. And I think that's the problem with the Bulls fan base.
Look,
right now,
I'm with you in everything that you just said. And whether or not you want to criticize them for not moving up, that's your prerogative. And it all goes back to opinion, too. What do you think of Bobby Portis? What do you think of Denzel Valentine? Can they have contributing roles here? Or are you willing to ship both of those pieces off and make your roster even thinner than it already is right now to risk it on one guy? That's the argument that needs to be made, and you can figure that out for yourself as a Bulls fan. You know where Matt and I stand on that. If you want to have an argument about not doing their due diligence in the draft process, I'm with you. We can have an argument all day, and I'll be on your side if you're ripping them for not doing their due diligence and trying to get back in the second round. And that's a completely different conversation that's been sparked by Bulls fans now over the weekend that we can have on tomorrow's episode. But I'm willing with you. If you want to criticize them for not trying to take a risk on a guy in the second round over money, then that's cool too. I'm ready to have that argument with you as well. But if you're talking about risking everything that the Bulls have built here and the quality picks that they have made on Bobby Portis at number 22, I'm cool with you having the argument about the second round. But as far as not moving up, I'm disappointed, but the more I look at it, I'd rather have these two guys as part of a building core. And you know, you talk about the flexibility too, and there's a little, I have a little bit of hope that maybe one or two of these guys turns out and takes that next step and turns on a level that we haven't seen before between the five guys and these two guys drafted, that maybe that intrigues one of the stars to at least have a conversation with the Bulls. Now, you can hold out the tiniest bit of hope there, but to ship everything off and to trade it for a top three or top four player, look, I said the only thing that I would have wanted them to take at three or four was Luka Doncic, and he wasn't available. He was taken by a trade in the Mavs at number three, and the Hawks decided to do that. And the Bulls didn't have a way to move up from there. I'd go back to the Orlando pick. The Bulls were handcuffed, and they got unlucky because Orlando wanted a guard, and if Trae Young was there, they were going to take him at six, and there was no way for the Hawks to be able to make a deal that ensured them Trae Young, a la having to give up more in order to get that number three pick. And that would have probably been selling off the whole ship. And who knows? It could have even been a talk about Chris Dunn being a part of that package as well. We don't know. Think about all the things with Darren Schroeder there. So I just don't think the odds were in the Bulls' favor there, and they got kind of unlucky. So I'm willing to have the argument about the second round pick, but being disappointed or not taking a swing at number seven because they stand pat and criticizing them for that, I don't think I can be on board with that.
Yeah, and look, I'm with you, those of you who are on this front office for their decision to, or their tendency to not value second round picks because it's frustrating in a rebuild. At the same time, I mean, you can turn that argument on its head and say, really, how often do second round picks pan out? We're about to, you know, watch Paul Zipser go away.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on,
the most notable recent second round pick that the team has. Now, if you think that they're just straight up not doing a good enough job at scouting talent that is projected to be second round talent, then that's one thing. That's a whole other conversation, and there may be some truth to that. As we were talking about them earlier on today's show, about kind of having a laser focus on Chandler Hutchison, and maybe they do that kind of thing to a fault at times. That I am absolutely willing to agree with. But in the case of this specific 2018 draft, you can be upset about not trading up to get the guy that you think was going to be a franchise changer, but you can't then also in turn criticize them for not, you know, for trading away a bunch of first round picks if that is what they had done instead. It's basically just you gotta roll with the punches. And as you said, Jordan, what did you say? I mean, you pick your battles. I think with a lot of battles that this fan base has with this front office right now, all things considered, the 2018 draft, they did a pretty good job. I won't say they did a great job. I'll say they did a pretty good job.
I will too. And I want to have the conversation tomorrow, Matt. So I'm going to save it for then about second round picks and whether or not, like, what side you sit on as far as the second round pick goes. Because that thing still bothers me. And I feel like the Bulls are now just dying on a hill that I think they shouldn't necessarily be willing to die on, and that's not even scouting the second round or really caring about it. So we can go through the history of that tomorrow, and whether or not callers want to interact with us too as far as text messages go. How do you guys feel about it? We'll talk about that on tomorrow's episode. Leave us all your texts and voicemails at 331-979-1369. You can follow us on Twitter, on social media. Hit us up there at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls_Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan Malley, for Matt Peck, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We are out. Deuces.